I'm going to call the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. Representative Davids, you have a couple of motions for us.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 12, 2024.
Representative David moves the minutes from Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative David, your second motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the minutes from Thursday, March 14, 2024.
Representative Davids moves the minutes from Tuesday, March 14, 2024. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids. You're on your way to becoming a surrogate vice chair.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. It's fun to win one. Two. Fun to win two.
Members, I have a motion on House File 1630. 1630 is a bill that we have heard in the previous session. We heard it this session as amended. My motion will be to refer House File 1630 as amended to the Committee of Capital Investment. And is there any discussion? Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't here when we had the hearing this last time. I'm wondering if we could have a very brief discussion about the bill before we vote to move it through.
Capital investment.
Correct. Before we move it to capital investment.
Are Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, are we going to have a brief discussion about it before we vote on it?
Representative Rarick, we had a discussion on this last session. We had a discussion this session. What would be your concern?
May I speak?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, my concern is the same as it was the last session, and I wasn't here this session for this hearing as I was ill, but my concern is that we've put the University of Minnesota together with Minn State when we're removing the one-third obligation, and they're very different systems, as we've been discussing for decades probably, about their inability and ability to raise additional funds. The University of Minnesota has a different capacity than the Minn State system. They've got a very large endowment. They've got a lot of things that make them very different. And my concern is putting the two of them together. I have less of a concern about removing this obligation for the Minn State system. I do have a concern about removing it for the for the University of Minnesota system, as they do have their own authority to do bonding. And so I have a concern, and when we vote, I'll be voting no for that very reason. And again, because I was ill and I wasn't here, I wasn't able to do an amendment to that effect. Unfortunately, I just got back this morning from seeing doctors.
All right, noted. Any other discussion? Representative Peabody.
I would make just the opposite argument, and I appreciate that the chair will do what the chair feels best, but I would say that we have a duty and a responsibility to all the students, and this reduces the financial burden on our students. So I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
And Mr. Chair, I'd like
Representative
a roll
Rarick.
Call. Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call, please.
We're going to take a roll call, and for those members who are not familiar with the roll call and some of the nuances of it, the chair is going to vote first, so the chair's name will be called first. And for those of you who are interested in how the chair votes, you may want to keep your ears open for that. So the clerk will take the roll. Chair votes aye.
Chair Pulaski, aye. Vice Chair Volkma. Lead Rarick.
No.
Representative Coulter?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Representative Hicks? Representative Cleaborn?
Aye.
Representative McDonald? Representative Noor?
Aye.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Vain?
On a vote of 5-4, motion prevails. Next item on the agenda is Representative Hansen with House File 4565. Representative Hansen, And I believe Representative Hansen, you want to put the bill in order?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. I have a DE1 amendment.
So, Representative Hansen, you move the DE1 amendment to the bill?
Yes, please.
All those in favor of the Hansen motion for the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Representative Hansen, your bill is in order. To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 4565 is the Minnesota Respond, Innovate, Succeed, and Empower, or RISE Act, to ensure students with disabilities on campuses around the state are supported with an accessible and consistent accommodation process. Every student with disabilities should have an inclusive higher education experience, but our current systems are not optimized to ensure there is a consistent procedure throughout the state to provide these services to students with disabilities. This bill will ensure that each campus adopts and disseminates a transparent and explicit policy in plain language for admitted and enrolled students to self-disclose their disability status and or accommodation needs to initiate an interactive process for reasonable accommodations. Every student should feel like they belong in college, and getting help with accommodations can be daunting and, frankly, can sometimes require a lot of courage and support to effectively self-advocate for themselves on campus. This bill will make securing accommodations on campus less discouraging, more welcoming, more supportive and consistent, and less burdensome with a simplified documentation and reevaluation requirements. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn it over to testifiers.
Oh, who's your first testifier, Representative Hansen?
I think first up we have, I'll allow them to introduce themselves if that's okay with you, Chair.
Yes, whichever order you wish. And welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Tyro Devilites. I am a student at Normandale Community College in Bloomington, and I am the Vice President of LEADMN, an organization that represents 100,000 community and technical college students. And I'm here today to ask for your support on the 4525 RISE Act bill. While I was growing up, I struggled in school, and in my house, grades were very important. I spent hours trying to pay attention and do my assignments, and through hard work, I was able to graduate high school and move on to college. My first semester was rough. I ended up having to withdraw from two of my classes, which put me on academic probation. Second semester comes around, and I ended up getting diagnosed with ADHD. The process to get accommodations was hard to navigate and took me quite a while. And the accommodations I could get were limited, but they made an improvement. About 21% of undergraduate students are reported to have a disability. Only about 8% are registered with their disability services on campus. The process is needlessly confusing and long. With students needing to reapply every semester, this puts an unnecessary stress on students. The Minnesota RISE Act would assist in removing some of the barriers disabled students face. Institutions would be required at the beginning of each term to contact students and inquire if they have a disability for which they may require accommodations. In addition, under the Minnesota RISE Act, a student can use their previous IEP or 504 plan as documentation of their disability, and students would not be required to be reevaluated for the presence of a permanent disability. More importantly, students who are denied accommodations would be allowed to withdraw from the class without facing any academic or financial penalty, which would have probably helped me in that first semester and prevented me from being put in academic probation. Thank you for your consideration on the 4525 RISE Act.
Members, any questions? Representative Hicks.
I do not have a question, Chair, but I do want to say thank you to Rep. Hansen. I was also a little struggled when I went to college and getting my accommodations. I remember I was about to take the entrance exam to be a special ed teacher. So if anybody wants to think the irony of this situation, I was going to teach other kids with learning disabilities like I had. And this was a really long time ago. So we didn't have, it was a written, you had to do a written portion, handwritten. I couldn't use computers, there was no spell check. I am dyslexic, dysgraphic, and have ADHD. And I knew I wasn't gonna pass. Like there was not a scenario in the world without accommodations that I would get through that test and get in to the program to teach other kids with dyslexia how to read, which was ironic. And I remember I called my mom, and I was very sad, and I was crying, and I said, it's all over, I'm not going to get into the program, my life is over, I don't have any other, there's not a plan B. And she said, are you ready to accept accommodations now? And I said, yes. And then I tried to get the accommodations. My documentation was out of date. My parents had to pay privately for me to have another evaluation. It was exhausting and really demoralizing when all I was trying to do was help other kids like me. And so when Representative Hansen brought this bill forward and I read the language, I had like an emotional reaction to 18-year-old me, who wouldn't have had to feel like the world was crashing around them. So thank you, Rep. Hansen. Thank you to your testifiers for bringing forth what is probably long out overdue to our community this year. Thank you.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, I didn't see a fiscal note, and I believe the language still talks about having at least one employee per college added to take care of this new responsibility or expanded responsibility. I'm wondering if we have a fiscal note or is one coming?
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, because the bill was introduced in its original version, now the committee has amended it with the DE and adopted the DE, a new fiscal note will have to be in process on that to find out how the DE now impacts 4565. I will say that the Senate is carrying a bill with very similar, not to be identical language, so hopefully we'll be able to in process copy that already completed note to this particular note.
Representative Burke, we're in possession of the bill. It's not going anywhere today. It'll stay in possession of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I did have a couple questions on the DE. In line point 2.32, it says a record or evaluation from a relevant licensed professional. Could you just, I don't see that defined anywhere. What would that mean?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Robbins. A number of different professionals can diagnose or help a student or a person identify their disability, be that a primary physician, a licensed clinical social worker, a mental health practitioner, a physical therapist. I could go on and on. And so rather than detailing all of the potential professions that could identify a student with a disability and help them from a medical perspective, treating that outside of the higher education situation, that's just encompassing the other professionals that could help them.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, but your intention is that it would be someone from the medical profession, or it could be broader?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, the intention is that anybody helping a person with disabilities, be it their, I mean, again, I could go on and on with the different lists of whether it be the accommodation services, the college counselor. There's a lot of different professionals that help students with disabilities. I don't think this is the committee necessarily to talk about scope of practice necessarily, so I don't want to get too far into the weeds. But a relevant licensed professional is broad and can mean a lot of different things. And so I think the students have the best way to be able to identify what kind of professional they're working with. And as long as they're a relevant medical professional, it's not a legislator, let's say, making that decision. I don't think we would qualify as a relevant licensed professional, but we can go through all the different licensing types in the state, nurses, again, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, and a number of others. If it would be preferred, Representative Robbins, to detail out every licensed professional in the bill, I'm open to that as well.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know that we need to detail all of it, but I think some narrowing might be helpful. And similarly, in subdivision 7.3.2, you know, the language is slightly different, and it says additional information from an appropriately qualified health or other service professional. So I just feel like it should be more aligned personally, but just my suggestion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen, I know you have two other testifiers. Members, if we could hold questions till we get the testifiers.
Sorry.
So, Representative Hansen, your next testifier.
Just two more, Chair Pulowski.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here today. For the record, my name is Kristen Burgess. I represent the Minnesota State College and University System, as well as specifically Metropolitan State University. I hold multiple roles at the university. I am the director of our Center for Accessibility Resources, which is charged with providing student accommodations. I am also a community faculty member, teaching in disability studies and the interim ADA coordinator for the university. Currently, Minnesota higher education institutions navigate a complex web of over 30 different laws and regulations related to disability accommodations. This often leads to confusion and inconsistencies in how these services are provided across both public and private institutions. For example, a student diagnosed in elementary school with a hidden disability, such as dyslexia, may have had an IEP. They go on to a college or university setting. That particular institution accepted the IEP as documentation of the existence of that disability. They then transfer to another institution. That next institution does not accept that IEP as documentation, which creates problems, making that student get another evaluation, which is costly and time-consuming, creating barriers that shouldn't exist for those students. Other students who with apparent disabilities, such as myself, may be asked for documentation, even though existing laws, such as the Americans with Disabilities Act, clearly state that disabilities that are apparent require no additional documentation. Additionally, some students acquire their disabilities later in life or come from backgrounds where disability isn't regarded or recognized, and that leaves them unprepared to navigate the current system. House File 4565 offers a solution by establishing clear guidelines for acceptable documentation when necessary. This bill will ensure a smoother transition for students seeking accommodations. Furthermore, it helps codify federal law at the state level, creating a unified standard, simplifying the process for both students and institutions. It helps those folks that are already existing in offices. Fiscal note question from earlier, there are already existing staff within every institution. It's an existing requirement. There may be additional needs down the line, but we don't know that at this time. The increased clarity is going to empower students with disabilities to focus on their studies rather than on paperwork that restates the existence of an already documented impairment. In my experience working with students with disabilities, the constant struggle with unclear guidelines only adds to the challenges they already face. House File 4565 is a step towards a more inclusive and supportive learning environment. Students have met with me and shared countless times of less than ideal interactions that they have had with other schools, whether that be in the P-12 level of education or higher education. For example, one student waited until midterm to request accommodations for diagnosed auditory processing disorder. Due to previous experiences where documentation had been required to be within a specific time frame, that student felt that they couldn't ask for those accommodations earlier. That student struggled unnecessarily, and the situation could have been avoided with clearer guidelines. Representatives, House File 4565 represents a significant step forward in ensuring equitable access to education for all Minnesota students. I urge you to move this bill forward and create a more welcoming and consistent environment for students with disabilities. The more we help shift the view of disability away from the medical model, where we perceive it as a bad thing, and move closer to an understanding that disability is simply a natural part of the human existence that has many barriers created by our society. With this understanding, it may be easier for students to ask for the supports that help them across their educational journey. Thank you for your time. Bye.
Thank you, Dirk. And you have one more testifier, Representative Hansen?
Yes, Chair, and that will conclude our testifiers.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Certainly. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angie Hall, she, her pronouns. I am the director of the Disability Resource Center on the Twin Cities campus at the University of Minnesota. I also serve as ADA coordinator for all five system campuses. I am here to urge you to support the Minnesota RISE Act. I have been an advocate in the disability community for over 25 years. My professional experience includes almost 20 years in the disability resources field. My journey started as a student, where I used the resources available and accommodations that were through my university. And then in my graduate program, served as a TA where I saw accommodations be a resource to our students and provide access. And then entered into this field because I wanted to be able to give back. I've had the pleasure of working with thousands of students as a practitioner, and I am here representing those students. And students are my heart and soul, and it never gets old watching a student come in very excited but also scared to join higher education. And we have the added factor that they are a disabled student trying to navigate a system. This legislation will remove a procedural barrier. I also am a co-author to articles that address the role of documentation, the role of student narrative, and professional judgment. I'm a past member of the Association on Higher Education and Disabilities Board of Directors, and I want us to really focus on the opportunity for us to provide equitable access to all of our students. At the University of Minnesota, we serve over 7,000 students system-wide. And many of these students, in fact, most of these students, are individuals with non-apparent disabilities. We also are host to the National Center for College Students with Disabilities, and we are home to the Institute on Community Integration. I also know that our student government, our undergraduate student government, is in full support and asks me to testify for this bill. For non-apparent disabilities, we know that sometimes barriers exist procedurally, and this bill will allow students to not have to prove that they need accommodations. That there are two parts to this, one being establishing disability status, and part two, which is to determine the reasonable accommodations. This removes the barrier for establishing disability status so that we can have that true conversation of how we support our students so that they have equitable access and equal opportunity. This bill details a baseline for which the universities can use, and it also gives flexibility to institutions to provide guidelines and specific policies and procedures to lessen that burden on students. It reduces the financial burden for our students because it costs us thousands of dollars to get psychoeducational evaluations if one were to need to do that to prove that they have a disability. When in fact, the history of disability, the history of accommodations should be enough for a student to self-disclose and be able to ask for the accommodations. Knowing that the accommodations do change from K-12 or P-12 to higher education, we can focus on that interactive process to determine what those accommodations will be to support the success of our students. This is also in alignment with the AHEAD guidelines. There are white papers that talk about student narrative, the role of documentation that confirms disability status. It doesn't confirm what accommodations are necessary. It only merely serves to confirm disability status because disability professionals are not diagnosticians. And also that professional judgment that the university has a responsibility to engage in the interactive process, to work with faculty, and work hand in hand with faculty to ensure that accommodations are implemented and that students have full access because they deserve to have full participation just like their non-disabled peers. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Hall. Members, any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question maybe for staff. A question for staff or maybe the bill author. Accommodations is listed at least 17 or 18 times in here. And what particularly in detail are accommodations?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And I think I would allow staff to answer if they so choose. But as somebody with a disability, I can tell you that accommodations look different for every single one of us. There is no template. There is no norm. There is no standard. What is necessary is to make sure that we meet the inclusivity of the higher education system. And students will need a variety of different accommodations, be it different materials to read their documents with, be it a screen reader or Braille like we're seeing used today. We also know that disability students who are hard of hearing may need different accommodations, whether that be an interpreter or access to a hearing aid that they have never had access to before. This can look like physical disability accommodation, like appropriately sloped ramps in a particular part of the building, or an accommodation of an escort to help the person get to their room through what is available. This building is a good example of a very low accessibility building. Folks in wheelchairs and using with mobility issues in this building have to take a different path than those who are walking. There are accommodations such as translation services. I could go on and on. For the sake of the chair's time, I will cease there. But I would highly recommend that any of us working in this space in the legislature familiarize ourselves with the needs of the people with disabilities, and that includes the wide array of accommodations that folks need.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Well, I see this as an important legislation for sure, but is it plausible when there is a plethora of accommodations and it could be never ending? How do we really gather that up and put some more punctuation on it, not so vague? I do see in your sections 3.28 that does allow the instructor, if they can't provide accommodation, mm-hmm. they have to write in writing and then have it submitted. But is it plausible to do so because there's so many accommodations to meet so many needs? And with that, there must be a cost to it as well. I realize it's probably priceless, the education that folks with a disability will get, but there must be certainly a cost to this and even a plausibility, if it's even a feasibility to do such a, to allow so many accommodations. And lastly, is the universities not already doing this? From my understanding, we have in current law, they're doing already making accommodations. How much more can we really spread the accommodations out?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski, and thank you, Representative McDonald. I'm going to respectfully answer your question as best I can. The idea that there's a limit to the accommodations necessary for a person with disabilities to exist in our world is a bit out of order for our community, at least. Our accommodation requests are there not to get us privileges, not to bring us ahead, not to give us a leg up, not to give us a hand up. It's to give us an equitable playing field in order to compete in the economy, to compete in higher education, and more. And so while, yes, I understand that the able-bodied community and able, different disability status folks as well, may have an idea of what is enough. But I want to be very clear that people with disabilities have been discriminated against since the beginning of time. And the ADA was required in order to be, had to be passed in order for people with disabilities to be seen as equals. And I would encourage everybody here to watch Crip Camp if you have not already watched that. I think that's a very good reflection of where our country has been, where it went during the passage of the ADA, and where we are still failing today. People with disabilities are people above all else, and the accommodations that they are seeking to participate in the world are not ever too much. And I have never, in my work in disability rights, seen somebody with a disability status take advantage, or what's being implied here is like it's going too far. That's not what people with disabilities do. People with disabilities are just looking to have an equal standing in the same settings as everybody else. And in regards to the fiscal note, Chair, there was a fiscal note posted. I've just shared it with the Chair and with RCA to have that distributed. It was posted just moments ago. Our friends in the other body sent me a message here quickly notifying me that the fiscal note was ready.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. We'll send that to the committee members. Representative McDonald?
Yeah, lastly, just to, I wasn't implying anything that we're going too far. My 14 years here at the legislature, most of the legislation that I will be proud of when I retire or leave this earth, hopefully the first before the latter, is with the folks with disabilities. So there's no implication here whatsoever that we're going too far. Did you hear that?
Yeah,
no, not at all. And I thank you for the legislation. I just asked a simple question. Is it plausible and doable? And that's all.
Representative.
And again, I stated my comment that this is a very good piece of legislation. Mr. Chair, that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Thank
Representative
you.
Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Hansen, I'm just trying to square away with what you just said about the people in the disability community deserve every accommodation. I'm not arguing with that. But how do you square that away with kind of the exception on 3.28 that Representative McDonald brought out? It's like, okay, if an instructor can't provide an accommodation. So your bill is making the exception. And so if you could give us some examples of where an instructor, you know, what would be an impossible accommodation that an instructor could cite under this, under your proposed law?
Representative Hansen.
Chair Pawlowski, the line that you're referencing, Representative Scott, says that if they cannot provide an accommodation because it would fundamentally alter the nature of the course, which is important verbiage here, then we want them to be able to provide some written information to the student. I would also, Chair, if I could defer to my colleague, my testifier here, that could potentially answer a little bit more about this question. And the previous one, I think insights from people on the ground, hands-on, doing this work, are far better than anything I can say.
Director Hall.
Thank you, Chairman and Committee. The fiscal impact here is nominal. We have, I'm standing in solidarity with my previous colleague who also testified, that we have the systems in place to serve our students. And yes, the numbers may increase, and that may mean an increase in staff to be able to make sure that our students get the accommodations. I think we really focus on what are the barriers that students are experiencing. Are we removing technological barriers, physical barriers, communication barriers, attitudinal barriers? And I think that there's an opportunity for us to do this. We've been doing it for many, many years, and we will continue to do so. I don't have any worries that our state institutions will be able to respond to this legislation.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the committee's time today, and thank you for allowing my testifiers to speak directly to an issue that I think oftentimes goes untalked about. And I think making sure we are aware that inconsistencies exist in our accommodation procedures. Sorry, Chair, would you like me to pause?
I know, Representative Scott, you have something else?
Yeah, I wasn't finished with my questions.
Okay. Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Sorry to interrupt you if you were doing your closing. Sorry about that. I thought I still had the floor. I just wanted to clarify that in what you're presenting here, according to 318, the student with the need for accommodations, it's on them to contact the university. Because in the employment world out there, and the universities are employer, they're not allowed to ask about a disability. So it's the student that would have to seek help with our testifiers department, so to speak. They would have to be the ones making that effort to say, hey, I need this accommodation. I just want to understand that correctly.
Representative Hansen.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Scott, you got it right. Self-identification of disability and self-disclosure is the norm these days, and it is the legal way to make sure we make accommodations. We never want an employer or higher education institution or this body or anybody to insinuate what a person with a disability needs. They are very capable of telling us what they need.
Representative Cleburne. I'm sorry, Representative Scott. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is really directed to you as the chair. If you decide to include this in any bill that would come out of this committee, I would ask that maybe we continue to work with the author of this legislation and make sure that there's a footnote added to the direct admissions letter, if that's not included, so that students who would have disabilities would know that this is something that they could look forward to going forward. Thank you.
Representative Hansen, I'm going to leave that answer to you.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski and Representative Cleborne. We do have a piece in the actual policy, and then the dissemination of the policy is referenced on line 1.20, making sure that each institution of higher education shall adopt a policy making self-disclosure by a student with a disability with sufficient proof of disability, which starts the interactive process for reasonable accommodations under subdivision 4. And then it goes on, I won't bore the committee with reading this, but it goes on to talk about disseminating this information, but don't disagree with you that on an admissions letter or even every semester upon enrollment, we do have a piece in here reminding folks that at the point of each academic term that they offer an opportunity for admitted students to self-identify as having a disability as well, and then also making sure that we're not asking folks who have a permanent disability to reprove that their permanent disability is still there. So I think both of the things of notifying on the acceptance letter is a good idea if it's not interpreted to be included in this, and then also making sure that each academic term is not another loop for students to go through, basically.
Representative Cleburne.
Yeah, I just want to clarify to make sure I understood this. My recommendation was that OHE, in the direct admissions letter, would make sure that students know that they could ask for accommodation.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Representative Cleburne, and Chair Pawlowski for the clarification. I think that's definitely a feasible thing to ask of OHE, for sure. I would like that.
Thank you.
So, Representative Hansen, you would then work with the office to see that occur?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen. I was just wondering, you know, we always bring bills because there's kind of an outcry or constituents or somebody has had a real issue, and so we try to fix that issue. And I'm just curious, is there a diagnosed disability that represent a group that have had struggles with getting accommodations? There's a mention of ADHD. You know, that's very familiar with ADHD. Probably I'm an undiagnosed Gen Xer with ADHD because we weren't diagnosed with a lot of stuff with Gen X. Anyway, so I'm just wondering, is there who's kind of the push behind this? Is there kind of an overlooked group that we haven't paid attention to?
Representative Hansen.
Chair Pawlowski, Representative Rarick, anecdotally, I know I've heard a lot from my folks in the autism community who have felt that the accommodation process has been challenging there, but I would defer again to the my testifiers who have boots on the ground to discuss more, if that's okay with you, Chair.
Representative Rarick, you want to respond to that?
Well, I was hoping to hear, where the impetus of the bill came from, and if there's a newly expanded group of folks that are finding difficulties with accommodations.
Representative Hansen, do you have an answer to that question? I think you partially gave it with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I work in the human services space too, and again, as a person with a disability myself, I experienced it. I know that I had other peers in my college setting that experienced it. There was no process for me to ask for help for my condition, and I was too afraid. And so just from a very personal perspective, I have seen the shortfalls of this. But I think it would be safe to say, and folks in the disability community can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think every single one of us has had a challenge getting an accommodation at one point in time, and that is no different at the higher education level. And so I wouldn't say that I see necessarily an influx of people with one disability or another disability who are seeking this. I think this, in the disability community, we move as one more often than not. And so really standing up for each other's accommodation needs is really important. Again, I'm gonna make a shout out to the movie Crip Camp, because I think that movie does a really good job in this documentary of identifying the ways that people with disabilities, whether they be physical limitations, intellectual disabilities, whatever it may be, worked together at Crip Camp to really help support each other. And I think that is what we should all strive to be doing, is seeing what each other can do not just what we can't do and how we can help each other with that. So the short answer is no, not an influx of any one particular diagnostic criteria, but definitely a ringing song that our disability community has been singing for many, many years.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that I understand. I have struggled myself. I have family members, including a very important person to the legislature here who does a lot of disability work, my very own brother, who has found that St. Paul's not very accommodating, the city itself. So I understand completely. And he struggles, and I won't go into his struggle, but we literally don't go out to dinner in different places of St. Paul because you can't get to the restaurant. Right. So I completely understand. I just was curious as to where the bill had come from, and usually it's voices getting very loud that rise to the legislature. So I was just curious as to the path that this came to us today, and if there was, you know, folks that were not being accommodated, that those voices rose up. I was just really curious as to that as well. And certainly you had mentioned autism, and we have a steadily growing group of those that are autistic, sadly, that have had things happen in their lives, or, you know, I don't know how the path was that they got there, but they are there. They are also members of my family as well, so I understand that. It's when you start to think about the accommodations that could be made, just in this small group of, well, I have a very large family. I have almost 100 people just in my own family, but the accommodations could be small, they could be big, they could be all kinds of things in between. So thanks for sharing that. I was just curious as to the path. Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Representative Hansen, summary.
Thank you, Chair Pelosi, and thank you, committee members, for a robust discussion. It's always a good day to advocate for inclusivity of all people, especially people with disabilities. And I appreciate your time, your support, and I will follow up on Representative Cleburne's suggestion and get back to the committee. Again, the fiscal note was provided to the Chair and CA, and I hope that gets out to everybody as soon as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.